Well, yesterday, you might remember, we started out talking, and this whole thing is about building a congregation, and we talked about the Lord's view, the Lord's vision, if is kind of the term that I played with, of what a local congregation should be like. And we ran through some passages with the seven churches there mentioned in Revelation, seven churches of Asia, as we call them. We mentioned Corinth, and we found out that they're not there anymore. And so, did the Lord know what He was talking about? Absolutely, He did. He has a plan. He has a view. He has a vision of what His church should be like. And a local congregation is made up of individuals that have come together to do the work collectively as a congregation. Over in Psalms, the 84th Psalm, it's 85, sorry. In verse 6, There is a statement, there is a question that is made. Will you not revive us again that your people may rejoice in you? And when we think about that particular statement, there's a group of people clear back then that the plea is made, revive us again. We've heard why we might forsake the Lord. We've heard that Jesus saves. We've heard these things. But I want to challenge us today, and it's going to get a little deeper, a little rougher today as we talk about developing a plan. Yesterday we talked about examine us and how we should examine ourselves and examine a congregation. Today we're going to look at some misconceptions of a view of a congregation and its success and plan development of how we need to get back on the right road, or as I call it, getting on board with the Lord. We might start with this type of a question. When we say this, what has hindered us? And you look at that, and that's a negative thought, isn't it? What's hindered us? Well, you know, I'm finding that, and certainly I'm not as old as some of you, but I'm finding that once you get past the double nickel and on up past the three score, that you get these calls from these younger gospel preachers, and they want to know some things, and you're sitting there going, I still want to know this. And here's one of their questions. Why are my sermons not motivating the people? And my answers usually are, I don't know, I've never heard you preach. I have no idea. Well, certainly what they can say is we're hindered in our work. This is hindering us. And they start down a list. And this list, all of a sudden, when you look at it, is a list that any of us could make. It's one of those lists that comes out and it just stands before us. And let's just look at some of these things. What's hindered us? What's caused us to make a plea to even have a series of three lessons on revive us again? What causes congregations to go into that state of despair? Could it be poor location? Now, I'll tell you, I've sat through a lot of classes, a lot of things like this, and the first thing you're going to hear is location, location, location. You're in a bad area. You're in a bad building. You need a new building. You need a new this. I don't know how many congregations I know that built that new building and sunk. Folks, it's not all about your building. I'm not saying don't get a building. I'm not saying that. It's about the members. The building's not going to be on fire for the Lord. It's those who occupy it that's going to be on fire for the Lord. And so a building is important, certainly, but poor location. Got a call from a young gospel preacher just recently. He's going to make a move to a large city. He said, now, Steve, it's a downtown congregation. It's in a dangerous area. And I said, how do you feel about that? He said, I'm excited. He said, I've never been overseas to do foreign work, but I got a feeling I'm getting thrown right into some foreign work right now. And I said, you're right. You're right. I said, how do the members think? Well, they look at it and say it's not the best location. In fact, on the Sunday I was there to try out, there was a murder just two blocks away. Well, how do you feel about that? He says, a little scary, but he said, I thought to myself, I believe these people need the gospel. And I said, well, there's one good thing about it. Those people do need the gospel. And those people probably are not going to walk in to a building that's real fancy, searching for the gospel. They're going to feel uncomfortable. And they might not go to another location. They may be more comfortable in their own home territory. But here's the point. Folks, if we're going to put all of our eggs in one basket and say it's all about a building, I think we're missing what the Lord said when he talks about a congregation that's not lukewarm, or a congregation that has left its first love. I think he's talking about the people, not about your location, not about your building, but that comes up. Now, don't go away from here saying, oh, man, he says we shouldn't have that new building. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you're putting all your hope as a congregation into this new building is going to bring people in, you're missing what the Lord says for us as members to do. So poor location, building, that's what's hindered us. That's it. Finances. Finances, it's killing us. We can't do everything we want to do. What do you want to do? We want to build a new building. That's your financial problem? Yeah. In fact, we've drawn in all support from anybody preaching the gospel so we can have a new building. And that's hindering us. We want to have that. All right? The preacher. We talked about them yesterday. Let's get rid of that guy. Let's get rid of him. He's been here at least 2 years too long. How long has he been there? 2 years. And it's just been terrible ever since he's been here. Let's get rid of him. That's what's hindering us. And so let's go on down the list. It's our elders. What's wrong with the elders? They have no vision. Well, have you gone to your overseers? Have you gone to them, talked to them? They don't understand anything. And I'll certainly tell you, preachers and elders and location and buildings and things like can hinder, because in our minds it gets there. And once it's there, folks, it's there. You know how that is? I drive a Hyundai, not a Honda, a Hyundai. There's a difference in cars. And I drive that. And people come up and say, what kind of car is that? I say, it's a Hyundai. Are they any good? And you know, I say, yeah, they're good. They got a 100,000-mile warranty. They're good. I can talk to that person 2 months later, and they'll say, Steve, said, I don't know. I've been thinking about a new car. You heard about the Hyundais? They got a 100,000-mile warranty. Now, I wonder where he heard that. And I'm thinking to myself, we believe a lot of things, don't we? We hear a lot of things. We believe a lot of things. And we get in our mind, it's the preacher or the elders, it's there. Whether we like it, perception has become reality. And all of a sudden, we're hindered. Well, it's the deacons. They don't do anything. Well, excuse me. Now we've got the preacher. Now we've got the elders. Now we've got the deacons. And it's all their fault. That's what's hindering us. And if you don't like that, it's the members. And so pretty well what we've covered is we just need to take dynamite and blow up the congregation, the building, the members, and the location. And get rid of all of it, because that's hindered us. That's what's stopping us. And we look at those things and it's always someone else. I don't always do this, but I really try to operate under four rules. One is always be honest. Another one is keep current. Keep current is, we're usually good about that in the brotherhood now. We spread enough love, or you might say gossip, to keep current with everything. And the third thing is that you should always act and not react. And just what I'm listing up here a lot of times is a reaction. Not an action plan, it's a reaction to something. And the last thing is attack the problem and not the person. And so what you find up here is a situation where what's hindered us is always something else, always someone else. And there can be church trouble. And I hate that term, church trouble. There should be no divisions, according to 1 Corinthians 1. We look at this and we're brethren. We should get along. But we don't. In a local congregation, that can pretty well be the last few nails on the coffin of a congregation. Is church trouble. If you're in a large metropolitan area, I will not say there's a lot of congregations around here, and I don't know that history. Brother Graham, I think, is writing an article or researching for an article on that. I don't know that history. But in Indianapolis area, I can tell you, and in somewhat in the Louisville area, what congregation started with church trouble 45 years ago that are flourishing now, and everybody's just hunky-dory with it, and that's fine, but it started for the wrong reasons. Because church trouble is not a reason to go out and start a congregation. You know, it's brotherly love and things like that. But that, what we do, that's what's hindered us. That's what's hindered us. And death. Brother Irwin Himmel, in talking to Frank one time, about it. He says, you know, my dad got up one time and actually made this statement in a congregation. He got up and he says, I've been doing some analytical work about the congregation. When you say that, doesn't that just sound, that's just one of those words like a Dan King Mike Willis would use. Analytical. You know, just flows like that. And he said, here's what I've come to the conclusion. We've got some things that I think we could have some improvement with. And it's going to start with, we just need some good funerals. Well, you know how that would go over. And later on, he said in the same lesson, he said, part of my analytical work is to understand members. He said, every congregation has members that we will call oddwads. We're blessed here at this congregation because we have more odd wads per square inch than most congregations. And so when you look at that, what we find is sometimes deaths of strong members can cause a hindrance. We just experienced that at Greenwood. A man by the name of Tom Hill. Tom was a common man. Tom was a man that could do anything with his hands. And Tom was dedicated to the gospel of Jesus Christ in his own way. But Tom wasn't going to get up and do this. Tom was going to be there. The doors were open. The lights were going to be on. The light bulbs replaced. If something needed to be done, fixed, he was going to handle that. At 58 years young, he died of a massive heart attack. They were down at a family cabin. We're in a Bible class and get the call from his wife, Cindy. And Cindy says, Tom is gone. That was shocking. Because the first thing I thought of is when we started looking at the Greenwood congregation and us, we knew we needed workers. And the Lord blessed us with Tom and Cindy. And here, this untimely death, and selfishly for us, we would say, why couldn't he live to be 80? But realistically, that great hope he had, it's a wonderful thing for him. But this death, it was like a punch in the stomach to us. And you've been in congregations where that happens. A punch in the stomach. So those things can happen. And I've put just et cetera. Because I've only been around the Lord's church as a member for 52 years. And I'm sure I haven't heard all the reasons of hindering us as a congregation and its growth yet. But these things can happen. And then not only that can happen, but, oh, we can't do that. We tried this back in 86, and it didn't work then. It's not going to work now. I moved to a congregation, and I've been very fortunate to be able to be with congregations that when you get there, once you work through a lot of the excuses, they decide to work. But the first time that I was there and I tried this out, I said, hey, maybe what we ought to do, there's four distinct cities that make up the bulk of this area. Let's take one a month. And let's just, those that live in that area, let's just see what we can do. We can't do that. Okay, why? Are the rules? Yeah, the rule is we tried it in 86 and it didn't work then, so it won't work now. And sometimes that hinders us. Not everyone has a computer. That's true. They don't. And it does sometimes hinder us because our younger generation are very computer savvy. Guys like me are computer dangerous. And I have been known in more than one places to get it in a fix to where the fellow's trying to get the PowerPoint on going, what did you do? I don't know. But in a congregation, as we're going through this information stage, let me tell you what has to happen. Those that are computer geniuses and those that are computer dangerouses all have to be thought of when we're trying to communicate, we're trying to come across. That sounds liberal. I love this statement because it came from someone and I said, what does that term mean? Well, there was a liberal war years ago and that's what this was all about. And my comment was, handing out flyers on a Saturday morning? That was what the war was all about? I don't think that's the war you fought in, was it, Brother Connie? And and they're colored flyers too. And so all of a sudden you have to look at this because let me tell you, there are things going on that are more liberal than they need to be. But just because someone says that, you need to think about, is it or is it not? And most people do not understand the real issues of what we will call the institutional war. And I hit this, I taught for 18 years. We need Bible classes. And when we get into the plan, you're going to see this. We need Bible class teachers. I've already taught for 18 years. I'm 50 years old. I've retired from teaching. You do that in public school. I haven't found that passage yet, Mark, that says I can retire when it comes down to doing the Lord's work. I just haven't found that. One congregation had a lady who was 86 years old that wanted to teach a class. It was down in the basement. She can't go up and down the stairs. You know what they did? They moved the class upstairs. They moved it upstairs. Oh, what a wonderful thought process. Well, that's the preacher's job. So far, in my experience of preaching, I have not found anything in the work of the church that's not the preacher's job. Steve, the toilet stopped up. I know we got a pot full of deacons, but that seems to be the preacher's job. Steve, the lights don't work. Does that ever happen to you other guys that preach? It's all right there. And then the one, we have elders. We have elders. Okay, what's that mean? I think one of the neat things of a trip that I just got back from was watching the shepherds as they sit over here watching their flock. And I didn't see one of those sheep just raise its head and said, "Elders, come and eat for me." Not a one of them. So what does it mean we have elders? It means from a standpoint that they're going to oversee us? Yes. Does it mean they can eat for you? And they can grow spiritually for you? No. Doesn't mean that at all. And so these things can hinder us. And there's that et cetera again, because there's a lot more reasons we could go through. But as we look at this, remember this sign yesterday? Could we have a problem with vision? I believe we do. Now, yesterday we talked about, is our vision the same as the Lord? But let's look at our vision. Let's see what our vision is. By the way, do you remember the question we asked at the start of this series yesterday? Can you explain where your congregation will be in 5 years? If you've got that, I got a second question for you right underneath that. All right? The first one dealt with, where will you be at in 5 years? Here's the second part. How are you going to get there? How are you going to get there? You don't have to show hands, but if you want to do like this to me, how many actually had trouble answering the first one? So if you had trouble answering the first one, the second one's really going to cause you problems. But if your answer was, I guess, just where we're at now, all you got to do to answer the second one is do what we're doing now. Or it can be do what we're doing now. It could be the same answer but different expressions. Do we have problem with vision? How is your vision? Remember this passage? Proverbs 29 verse 18, where there is no vision. That's prophetic vision, guidance. Where there's no revelation, the people perish. And folks, let me tell you, that's true. Just as a statement is true, righteousness exalts a nation, righteousness exalts a congregation too. And when there's unrighteousness in a congregation, it can tear it down. And when there's no vision for a congregation to do the Lord's work, it's going to have trouble. Those biblical principles hold fast throughout life. What does it mean to have vision? Well, literally just means to be able to see things that are visible. However, unusual competence in discernment or perception, intelligent foresight. I've often wondered, before a shepherd leads that sheep to the next greener pasture, did they happen to scout that out? Did they happen to think this is where it would be at? Or did they just get the sheep up one day and say, let's move? Venture to say there was a plan. What we find is vision is the art of seeing things invisible. Jonathan Swift said that. Now, we're not talking about some miraculous thing here. We're talking about using the Bible, using the Word of God as our guide, and having the vision of the congregation locally as the Lord would want us to be like, and getting there and working at that. I believe we are still in the restoration movement, because I'm thinking we're still trying to get back to what we found in the New Testament. I would hope we are. I hope we never give up trying to get back to that. And so we've got a vision of what it is. It's laid out before us. We've heard lessons upon that. Have we trouble with our vision? What is the vision for the congregation you attend? Now, to be truthful, when I start this, this is where I would really like to sit back and say, is this the vision that you have? Is this the vision that we see? It can't be inadequate. It can't be. You know, I think this year what we'll do is we'll try to advertise one meeting to 10 more people. No, that's inadequate vision. The vision just couldn't be too general either. We want to fill the house. That's too general. That's just too general. It can't be too small. You follow this. You go to a gospel meeting. I love going to gospel meetings because here's what you see a lot of times. You just follow what I'm doing. Here's the door, or here's the window. And here's the brethren. So I say, what are you doing? Well, we're seeing who's coming to the meeting. Oh, did you advertise? Yeah, we sent a flyer to every neighboring congregation. And then you ask them, what about those that are lost? You mean canvassing people? You mean sending things out? You mean doing? And then you realize what they've done is they've opened the doors and they're looking out the windows to see who might come. And if somebody comes they didn't expect from a congregation that's a little shaky, what are they doing here? Wait a minute. That's who you invited. And so what we see is the vision could be just too small. Our vision that we have needs to be great. That's the Lord's vision. The Lord's not asking us to do anything that we can't do. He's not asking us to jump over any hoops we can't jump over. He has never required that of us. He's required us to give of our talents. As we are talented, to use those talents. Specific action steps. That can be troublesome among brethren, because you see, it requires us to have to work together. Faith. Faith. We can do this. With the Lord's help, we can do this. We're going to talk about these a little bit more. Boldness. We need to get up and go. We need to do that. And persistence. And we don't need to stop. You see, what's happened on our journey is that we've lost our persistence, which caused us to lose our boldness, which has really challenged our faith. But we sure have occupied the pews and talked about faith, boldness, and persistence. But we stopped. You see, those things seem to be in harmony with the Lord's vision. The Lord's vision is that a congregation is alive and active and either hot or cold, not lukewarm, using all its talents. It hasn't left its first love. It's not just sit down on the job. It's not just started complaining about we're in a terrible location. The preacher's terrible. The elders are terrible. The deacons are terrible. The members are terrible. It's not about all that. It's about what He wants and saying, I'm going to line up with that. I'm going to get on board with the Lord. Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look at the fields, for they are already white for harvest. We're trying our hands at gardening again this year up in Indiana. It really was my wife's idea. So I went and did what I'm supposed to do. I got out the lawn chair. I went to the shade tree. Our youngest son came, got the tiller. My next to middle child, the son, he got a chair and sit right by me. Connie, my wife, was out there with my son, and there was tilling going on and doing this, and I sit there. The only thing I missed was having a lemonade. And they got it all done. And then I'm able to tell you, we're gardening. We're doing it. And I'm going to eat every tomato that I can out of that garden. And if it doesn't come up, it's Connie's fault. You know, that's kind of how the work of the Lord is, isn't it? In the church. That's what we look at. But what we need to look at is, for me, I've got people that I know. And the fields are white for harvest. But if I just take the lawn chair and sit underneath the shade tree and I don't go out there and do any, why, is that not what Paul was talking about in 1 Corinthians 3? Somebody watered, or somebody watered and planted, and God gave the increase. You know what our problem is, folks? I always love that one, because if your spouse comes to you, if Diane came to John and said, John, you know what your problem is? And see, I know him well enough to know that he's saying, I want to slap him. When we say those things, that creates a reaction within us. But you know what our problem is, folks? Our problem is that we do not really want to put the effort it is that the Lord wants us to do. We want to give the increase because that's easy, we think. And we really want the Lord to go out and do the planting and the watering. And so we like to whittle on His end of the stick. But as you look at a congregation and the individuals in it, there are opportunities out there. Here's our vision, right? This is a great vision. This congregation is going along here. It's got 70 people at Bible study. And when you talk about vision, the first thing we want to do is go to what I call the brag boards. And a lot of times, there's two of them up. We want to go there and immediately we want to say, okay, now this is where we're at today, and this is where we want to be tomorrow. Well, have you ever thought about like 5 years out? Oh, sure, we'll change it to those numbers. Okay, that's really good. And just to show you that what we're doing is right, look, we've increased. So we've done what you're saying. No, has nothing to do with your brag boards. Nothing to do with brag boards at all. What we want to talk about is learning to plow properly. Luke 9:62, something about plowing and looking back. I remember when I first learned to mow a yard. All my father was excited, needless to say. He wasn't going to have to do it again. And he said, go straight, don't look back. And I did not know what he meant until I got at the other end, and I thought, that's a beautiful design. I have no idea what it is, but it's sure not straight. And that's sometimes what we need to understand. We need to learn to plow properly. Let's get on board with the Lord, laying out the plan. And it gets to be tough. Where are improvements needed? Did you remember the list we talked about yesterday? Remember breaking it down, evangelism, edification, and benevolence? Remember going through that, conversing if you have fellow elders, conversing with men if you don't have elders. But if you have elders, or it's just men, conversing with the congregation, finding out where you're at, are you on board with the Lord? And evangelism, edification, and benevolence, did you remember to do that? Well, then where are the improvements needed? Because you take that list and you take what your congregation has said and you look at the fellow elders. And you look at the fellow, what did it say we needed to do? And all of a sudden, you've got a starting point. You divide the plan into the three areas. And you look at it from edification, evangelism, and benevolence. And you look at that and say, okay, let's look and understand. We've got to get everybody on board to do this, but we've got to create a plan. And we need to make sure that we don't get this plan way ahead of everybody else. Everybody's got to be a part of that. And we develop subtopics under each one. For instance, edification, Bible classes. Evangelism, personal evangelism. Benevolence, spiritual growth groups. When we did this at Greenwood, and I'm only working with one congregation, but when we started this process, I had several gospel meetings coming up. And I told the other elders, I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to test out something. And when I come back, we'll see if it's the same thing in our congregation. So on the Sunday morning, during the Bible class period, as we call it, my wife has instructed me that we as preachers consider that to be another lesson, while the people there think it's a Bible class. And so I would tell them, we're going to have a Bible class. We're going to ask questions. And I'll say, how many of you know the Bible? I know the Bible. Good. How many years did it take to write the Bible? And then you get somebody in the back. I think it was 4,800. Okay, that's not quite right. How many people wrote the Bible? Got that down. There's 66 that wrote it. Because that's how many books there are. Well, great. How many's in the Old Testament? I think there's 42. Now, folks, this is serious because this is in a number of congregations, and it would be those folks, and there were elders sitting there. And I want to tell you, some of the preachers sit there, and maybe it was just catching them off guard, but it was too simple of questions for them. You ever had those simple of questions? And I came back to our elders and said, first year, we got to get back to the basics. Now, you say that to elders, you say that to scholars, you say that to some of us old preachers, and we're going, get back to the basics? What do you mean, get back to the basics? I want to tell you something. Not everybody is grounded in the basics. We get new move-ins to congregations, you do not know their total background. You get new converts, as we would put them, ones who have just obeyed the gospel, and you throw them into an adult class without having any basics. Do you know some people do not even know that are sitting in the Lord's pews what the rainbow means? Getting back to the basics. So the first year, I'm going to tell you, don't overthink a whole year spent on the basics. Wow, that's ridiculous. No, it's not. One of the problems we have in the Lord's church today is we've left the basics. And people in the pews do not know the basics. And that's sad. And as a result of that, to understand what we're talking about, look at our Bible classes. One of the things we did was really look at our Bible classes. We were on ABC curriculum, I believe was what it was called. And we looked at those and we were the typical congregation, I believe. It's getting ready for a new, in fact, the new quarter starts this Sunday, right, in July. That's if you're on a quarter system. And we would be up, let's see, tonight's Wednesday night, and we'd say, we still need teachers for this quarter, and the material should be in tomorrow. We just ordered it, and it'll be here at least Thursday. Contact Steve, and he'll get you the material when it comes in. Been there, done that? Sure. And then Sunday, what you hope Wednesday night after services is somebody signs up. If not, you wonder who's going to teach this class. It starts Sunday. And so you know the teachers, bless their hearts, they'd come and they'd sign up. And they said, I'm really busy this week. But you know what happened. Sunday morning, an hour or so before Bible class, they sit down and filled in the blanks. And they're going in to teach my children or my grandchildren about the Bible. We got thinking about that and said, whoa, let's look at the percentage of young people that have come through these classes in the last several years, and are they still strong? Are they weak? Have they totally fallen away? And the number was staggering. And so we said in this year, plan of back to basics, that lessons were going to be on the basics. Yeah, it was going to be tough. It's to be truthful, I don't know about you guys, but when somebody says, and I was part of that decision, we're going to spend a year on the basics, I'm thinking there's not enough material. I'll be preaching the same thing over and over again. Oh, there's all kinds of material to bring out. But the other thing we said is, we're going to change our Bible classes. And the first thing we had to do was look at it and say, we've got to get the teachers excited about material. And we just have to do that. But we've got to get them excited in the right way to where we're telling them we'll get material, but we really pick out a point or two and write your own material to go with it. But we as elders want to see it before you do that. How do we do that? Well, we decided to start a preparation class. And now we're into our fourth year, but our third year of teaching the material, but our fourth year of the preparation class. And let me tell you what that is. In the last quarter, right before we started the plan, we were in the plan. We were in the back to basics part of the plan, year one of the plan. That last quarter, the teachers who were going to teach the next quarter came downstairs, sit in a classroom with myself, and we went through all the material. They prepared their lesson plans. They studied together. We did this as a group. At the end of halfway of that quarter, their first six lesson or seven lesson plans were given to the elders to review. The elders made some changes if need to be, sent them back there. Then they prepared the last ones. And what we had at the end of that were teachers going into a quarter that had a whole quarter of Bible class time preparing material. And elders knew what was being taught. We're still on that. Do we still have to be concerned about teachers? Yes. What about a congregation that doesn't have that many teachers? It doesn't have to be during a normal Bible class time. You can have preparation class on Saturday mornings or Sunday afternoons to do this. But let me tell you what happened and what has happened. The knowledge level of those that go through the Bible classes is continuing to grow. We just completed a VBS, and the second largest class, hard to believe, was the high school class. And they got into it. They had great discussions, and a lot of them went out and invited their friends because they said, our Bible classes, our teachers know what's going on, and they can answer questions. So when we think about getting on board with the Lord, the first year has to be back to basics and getting everybody on board with what the basics are. We must remember, you see, it's about where the Lord wants us and how we get there. When we went to evangelism, we looked at this and said, what does the Lord want out of us? 16 more gospel meetings? 10 more trips to Sierra Leone? What does He want? Where's our world? Go into all the world and teach the gospel. Folks, I want to tell you something. There was a staggering percentage that we came up with. Just in looking. And whether it holds through, I do not know. But here's what, through a study, we found. If the preacher is the one inviting folks to come outside of the congregation, hold on to your hats. Here's a staggering number. 1% will respond. 1%. It's like we don't want to grow if you send the preacher out. I don't know why that's that way. But here's the other staggering thing. The members, 77% of people that they would go and invite would come in. We decided, whoa, this is staggering. This is just basic stuff. So it means if our members are out there, there are going to be visitors coming in. But the preacher could scare them to death. And so as a result of that, we looked at evangelism. We decided to bring in a gentleman to teach personal evangelism. Not in the way that we would call personal work, personal evangelism. He had prepared a very simple Bible study. We brought him in February. And he started teaching that. And our members, on a Saturday morning, we had 94 people there of about 136 members. Some of them were working, some of them, and they sit there and went through a session for about 3.5 hours. So much so they said, we need to do this again. We did it in July. We need to do it again. We did it in October. And we made a decision as elders, we just might as well hire the guy because these people are catching on to this stuff. And so we did. And so he's there now. And we told him, here's all we can pay you, and here's your whole job. Your whole job is going to be evangelism, but it's going to be working with the members in classes. It's going to be helping them to understand how to teach. It's going to be working with them on how to talk to people. It's going to be doing that. You may never, ever preach a sermon in the pulpit, but he has. But you're going to be teaching classes on a regular basis. What we decided to do on benevolence was, any of you have what they call personal work groups in your congregation? You divide up into those? Yeah. We looked at those and we said, okay, this is pretty neat, but what if we changed them to call them spiritual growth groups? And instead of just focusing on sending cards and letters, we focused on helping those in our congregation that are older, those that are in need. We focused on them doing things together out of, you know, two or three can get a little bit more nerve than one at times, doing some things. We got ourselves involved. There's a little thing called the Greenwood Freedom Festival. And we were there, and it was just individual members. Myself and one of the other elders said, hey, we'll put a booth up, we'll pay the booth, and we'll just invite anybody from our personal or our spiritual growth groups. That we had an 89-year-old lady come and pass out things. And so all of a sudden, and that's going on this coming Saturday, and there's a plan there. And it's great because you know what people are doing? They talk about it. Now, we still got our opportunities, don't get me wrong. But we have more people involved today than we had when we started the plan. And it's all about where we need to be and a vision of getting there and putting a plan together. We need to see about laying out the plan. Break down the plan into a topic per year, for instance, that covers all three areas and their subpoints. One of the things in the lectures you'll see, we had this plan development, then we were back to the basics. Then we went to this great thing of applying the basics. Well, I can tell you when we announced it's time to apply the basics, what you saw was exactly what you expect. Whoa. Developing a plan and studying the basics is different than going out an application. And so we had to get everybody on board to do that. And you got to it's got to be a reasonable timetable. One of the things we found, we don't know how much time we have at all. So our personal lives, we need to live for the Lord, and we do that daily. As a congregation, you need to do that, but you need to understand you're bringing along a lot of folks there. And those folks have to be on board. If you're going to get out here and get five or six going, unless you're a congregation of seven or eight, you're going to miss it if you're a congregation of 100 and only five or six. You need five or six, and you need to keep plugging away, but what's going to happen is they're going to get worn out carrying the load. You've got to be able to get your members on board. You've got to look at this, and it's got to be done not with a force feeding, but with encouragement and teaching and getting them to comprehend. It's about where the Lord wants us and how we get there. There are some things, though, that we learned, and there's things that I would warn you as you look at your congregation. Number one, other than your gospel meetings for the next 5 years. How many of you know what Bible curriculum you'll be using in 5 years? How many know for the fourth quarter of this year? Okay. And I don't mean this in any way other than challenge us. What kind of thoughts do we give of what kind of food we're going to feed? What are we doing? And as an elder, I got to tell you, I take that pretty seriously. I cannot lose sight of heaven. Along this journey we're going on, I've got to stay focused on the responsibilities of the path. I've got to look at this. We all want heaven. That's our hope. That's our comfort. That's our joy. It's there. But for me to get to that back door back there, I've got to take steps along the way. And it's those steps along the way that I've got to make sure are in line with the Lord, or I'm not going to be in a position to receive mercy. And that's my individual life. And let me tell you, if you're an elder here, you're going to stand before God in judgment on how you led that congregation. You ever thought about that? Just as we as husbands and fathers are going to stand before how we've led our household. And so I don't want to lose sight of where I want to be, but I need to make sure the steps I take help get me there. Now, Brother David the other day, I understand, said that we're beyond children's songs. And we are. My hope is built on nothing less. But I want to tell you about this song. Did I drop it back? I'll tell you about this song. This Little Light of Mine, I'm going to Let Shine. Remember that song yesterday? This one here probably all of us sung as a kid too, right? Wise men build his house upon the rock. When I think about that song, and I see children singing that, and the Lord has blessed us. I've traveled with Brother John over to Moldova. In fact, John Gentry was with us the first time. You remember us singing that at the orphanage over there, John? We sung that in Sierra Leone with the kids. Remember, John? And you know what we would sing it with the kids? What we failed to realize was that the Moldovans had never heard it, nor had the Sierra Leones ever heard it. the adults started doing this. When's the last time you sung "This Little Light of Mine" if you don't have a VBS? Been years, maybe? When's the last time you sung "Wise Man Built His House Upon the Rock" if you don't have a VBS? Now, for you ladies, you teach children's classes, you probably sing that. But I want to tell you something. I'm serious about getting back to the basics, because the Lord's serious about that. The foundation is what's crumbled among our congregations. That's what's happened. And we've got to get that foundation back, folks. We just have to do that. And if it's something as simple as getting the congregation to sing a simple children's song of getting it built on the right foundation, then start your plan there. Let's stand and sing it, John.
Wise man built his house upon the rock, and the rains came tumbling down. Oh, the rains came down and the floods came up. The rains came down and the floods came up. The rains came down and the floods came up, and the wise man's house stood firm. Oh, the foolish man built his house upon the sand. The foolish man built his house upon the sand. The foolish man built his house upon the sand. And the rains came tumbling down. Oh, the rains came down and the floods came up. The rains came down and the floods came up. The rains came down and the floods came up. And the foolish man's house went splat. So build your life on the Lord Jesus Christ. So build your life on the Lord Jesus Christ. So build your life on the Lord Jesus Christ, and the blessings will come down. Oh, the blessings come down as the prayers go up. The blessings come down as the prayers go up. The blessings come down as the prayers go up. So build your house on the Lord Jesus Christ.
Thank you, John. Thank you. You can sit down now. I've got to tell you something. I look out among the audience and see folks who want to go to heaven. I see scholars in the Bible. I see gospel preachers. I see faithful women. From Proverbs 31. And what I just saw was you humbled yourself to sing a song that's a children's song about building your house, building your life upon a rock. I want to close with just an encouraging, and by the way, you see, anybody that's seen me preach, heard me preach or whatever, and actually came back the second time, this slide is always at the end of my lessons. This slide comes as a result of me being taught in 1972 when I was going to give my first gospel sermon by my father, and you didn't have PowerPoint, that there would be severe consequences if you didn't state the plan of salvation at the end of every lesson. If you're hearing a gospel preacher, there are going to be severe consequences. We're almost afraid to give an invitation anymore. And the Lord's whole life was spent inviting. His whole life was spent to live and to die so we would have that opportunity to invite. And so when you think about a plan, you better include how you're going to get out and do what the Lord said of inviting. So this is an invitation. Now, we're not going to have an invitation song. But for us that are here, that are striving to go to heaven, and on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon, you've taken your time, you've come down for these lectures, you're sitting here, I want you to just reflect of what part of that, who is it that you hate so bad that you don't want to include in a plan with your congregation to go out and teach the pure gospel of Jesus Christ so their souls too can be saved. Brother Philip North's going to lead us in a song. It's, tell me again the number.
133.
It's Revive Us Again. He is from Branson, Missouri. Actually, it's interesting. I was telling him, I was in Branson not long ago, and we went to this show, and he said, well, did you hear the voiceover? Or was the legend? I said, yeah. He said, that's him. And so I told Connie, she said, I don't remember seeing him there. No, it's his voice. But we're thankful he's going to lead this. It's Revive Us Again. When we sing this song, I want us to think about the fact of what this means. Get us on fire for the Lord again. What can one man do? I don't know, but if I remember correctly, while Paul was in Ephesus, all of Asia heard the gospel, right? That's what one man can do. So what can you do? Could you do that in your congregation? Get your congregation on fire for the Lord. Tomorrow we will talk about how we stay focused on the plan. Let us stand now. Revive us again.